When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition comic book podcast, where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, is Mr. Brian Reese.
Hey, Paul. Good to be here.
Good. I'm glad. I'd hate it if it wasn't good to be here.
It's always a joy.
This is a fun thing. Whether anyone listens or not, we enjoy doing this. This is fun.
Yeah.
Today on the program, we'll be discussing Avengers Forever.
Which is not a statement, it's an actual comic.
Exactly. This is a limited series written by Kurt Busiek, Roger Stern, with art by Carlos Pacheco. It is a simple story.
It's a straight narrative.
Yes, it's full of time travel shenanigans. So we should have fun trying to piece that together.
And I do love me some time travel.
I know. See, I love the time travel story. You are not a fan.
Although I love Legends of Tomorrow, rest in peace.
What about, I guess it's not time travel, but Everything Everywhere All at Once?
I haven't seen it.
Really?
No.
I was actually thrilled at the Oscars because I was saying that's the best movie of the year. It's absolutely a joy from start to finish, but it would never win Best Picture. And there you go. There you go. They made a good choice this year.
I was a Banshees guy, so, you know.
That was a good movie as well, but once you see it, all I have to say is googly eyes and hot dog fingers.
I have gathered that those are things that exist within that.
It's a wonderful thing. And then, of course, Short Round is wonderful in it, too. But this is not an Everything Everywhere All at Once podcast.
Except it kind of is.
Except it kind of is. The multiverse has been, I don't know, a thing for a while now. Not just in the Marvel Universe, but just in general. I don't know. Is the multiverse in the zeitgeist?
I think it is now.
Yeah. I think people are just wanting a different reality.
Well, can you imagine why they would not?
Yeah. I think there's very few people who say, yeah, I'm good with what's going on. This is fine. Unless you're a little dog drinking coffee with a fire all around you. Yes. I'm an old man describing a meme. That's podcasting gold right there.
A meme.
Oh, these memes. They're all over the place, I tell you. Anyway, boy, we're extra rambly today.
It's the later start.
Exactly. Yes, we're starting a bit later today. So maybe we have too much coffee and we're far too awake.
Or the bourbon and hookers. It's one of the two.
I lost my place.
That's such a very specific Chicago reference that I can't even.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, we in Chicago, you have bourbon and hookers on a daily basis. Daily. Get it?
I do.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So anyway, after all this banter, we're going to talk about the light subject of books being banned. Yes. Yeah, so it's at the time of this recording, we are in March of 2023, to put a timestamp on this. Book banning has become all the rage recently. It seems to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's always existed.
Yes, but you know, but it's really it's kind of taken off.
The level that it has ramped up, particularly the last year, has been notable. And this is a comic book podcast, so we're going to talk about that aspect of it.
Right.
But it should be noted. I've got the according to the American Library Association. Book banning, so as of in 2022, so this is last year, we're not talking about what's been happening now. There have been, and I'm cheating, I'm looking at the website. According to the American Library Association, there have been 1,269 demands to censor library books and resources, and that's in 2022. And that is an uptick of... Well, I can't see it, but that's a massive uptick over the past several years. And this is just 2022.
And there's been quite a bit this year as well. And again, I don't have the numbers in front of me. Maybe you do, but...
That's a 38% increase. And the demands have included 2,571 unique titles. So it's 1,269 demands that include 2,571 titles, of which the majority of them have been targeted to the LGBTQ and community and also people of color.
I bet that's just a coincidence.
Again, looking at the ALA site, 56% targeted books and materials in school libraries, classroom libraries, or school curricula. 41% have been in public libraries.
Wow. It's rather depressing.
It is. I mean, we know what this is about.
Yes, it is. It is fueled by the culture wars that are happening these days. Actually, you know, this is something that's been going on for quite a long time, especially in, our country.
Yeah, Frederick, I mean, look back at The Seduction of the Innocent by Frederick Wortham. I mean, comic books have always been a target. Well, book banning in general has been a thing that has existed. We go back to Ulysses, there's so many examples throughout time. I mean,
you could go back to Gutenberg, actually.
Right. This isn't a historical podcast. We're not going to go into the depths of attempts for censorship. But, for comic book purposes, we go back to Wortham with Seduction of the Innocent, which led to the creation of the comic book code. But Wortham was using comic books as a way to target societal ills. And they were an easy target.
Right, because they were geared towards kids. Right. So it was easy to say, these things are ruining our children. Won't someone think of the children? It's interesting to see Wortham's, his arguments that it causes deviance. It causes homosexuality.
Right.
It's a lot of the arguments that he made back in the 50s are the same arguments still being made today, which is interesting and sad.
And things had settled down a little bit. There have always been challenges. Any librarian out there, whether it be school librarian or public librarian, can tell you that it's a battle they've been fighting forever and have continued to fight. But the ramping up that has happened just over the past year and a half in particular has been disturbing. And it's problem. Like, so again, trying to keep this in the comics realm, we've had comics that have always been challenged. Bechdel's Funhouse
Saga.
Right. Numerous other titles have always been challenged in numerous ways. And I have a slight conflict, particularly when we're talking about school libraries, where I am not a parent. I have never been a parent that I know of. It's hard for me in some cases. My stance on all books should be available to everybody at all time, no matter what the book is, I feel pretty strongly about personally. But I don't have a 7-year-old.
Yeah. Well, I am a parent.
You are a parent.
Yeah, I am a parent and did raise a child who's fairly well adjusted, I think. Yes. I mean, as a parent, you keep ultraviolet imagery away and things like that. I was more concerned with the violent stuff. But at the same time, yeah, you just use your common sense. And you don't say you can never read this ever. You just say, read a little bit later. That's all. I don't know. I mean, if you're in an elementary school, yeah, you're not going to put, Hellblazer in an elementary school.
Right.
But but you don't ban it. That's the thing. Like banning it forever. You can't get it, because a parent can, if a parent wants to allow their child to read something, that's okay. I read some pretty, I read Stephen King and lots of horror when I was a kid, probably, and saw movies that I shouldn't have seen back in the day.
Well, we all have. Like, I remember, so when I was in high school, it must have been a sophomore or junior, for Christmas, I asked for my conservative mother, on my Christmas list was the complete poems. There was a collected poems of Allen Ginsberg.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, clearly my mom did not, I got it for Christmas. Clearly, my conservative Christian mother did not actually peruse the book that she bought me for Christmas, because I don't think she would have ever given that to me.
Probably not. But did it damage you, Brian?
Well, no, I'd like to believe, that it led me to other interesting writers. I don't even know if I'm a huge Ginsberg fan at this point, but when you're in, it was all about the Beats. I read The Naked Lunch in high school, for Pete's sakes.
Yeah, me too. So Ginsberg was a gateway drug to other things. But, you know, I have a similar type of story. Is one Christmas when I was very young, I wanted Steve Martin's new comedy album that came out. I forget which one it was. And my mom said, sure, he's a comedian. I've seen him on TV. He's on Johnny Carson all the time. So she bought me the album. I remember Christmas morning, I was so excited. We put it on the turntable. We were listening to it. It got about a couple of skits in and he's just filthy. And yeah. I remember my mom just going, huh, am I a bad parent? I was like, no, this is really good. Yes, we did. Yeah. We did turn it off and didn't listen to the whole album. It was getting slightly uncomfortable.
Yeah, you're sitting with your parents watching a TV show and a sexy time scene comes on.
Yeah, everyone just sort of looks at the ceiling and hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. You know, I work at a library and we occasionally come across things. Like I remember recently there were some books by Junji Ito that were in the teen section. And we moved them to the adult manga instead of the teen manga.
Sure.
Yeah. And that's not, I think that's, that kind of a thing is okay. I mean, it's not banning, it's not removing it from
you're
the
not
library.
Censoring. What you're saying is you as a librarian are making a decision, a guidance decision.
Exactly.
Right. And you're saying this book should be available. And if this book should be available, we're not going to ban this book, but you are making an age-appropriate decision.
Right. And I think that's fine. And it's still available.
Like if it, so at the library, if a kid came in at the library work, I don't want to get anybody in trouble here. So if you can't answer this question, if a younger person came in and wanted to take out that book from the library, what is the library's current, what is your library's current stance? If you can't discuss this, I understand.
Well, I can only talk in vagaries. But, you know, there are age restrictions. You have to, you can get a library card as a kid, but you have to have parental consent.
Right.
That's, you know, I can't say, not that I'm like banned from saying this or anything, but I can't say. I think it's an individual case by case basis rather than just this blanket thing.
And so I think this leads to, and again, to pull us back into comics, well, it is, you were just talking about a comic.
Yeah.
I think what's troubling with all of this is, like, I understand and I am for parents being able to kind of regulate and be involved with what their younger children are reading.
Yes.
But when this is used, so I'm thinking, you know, when this is used to decide that nobody gets to read this book, then I think that becomes very problematic. I'm not interested in delving into like what parents should or shouldn't regulate for their own children. That's outside of what we do in this podcast. This the book banning that we're looking with comics in particular is becoming very problematic because it is an attempt to decide that nobody can read.
Yes.
And some of the big names right now, Bone.
Right.
We talk about Bone. Bone. Mouse. Mouse is probably the biggie in all of this, although genderqueer is rising up there in this as well.
Just as a side note, doing a little bit of research on this topic because I knew we were going to be talking about it, I went and got genderqueer. And haven't read it yet, but it said, you know what? Everyone wants to ban this. I want to read it.
Right.
And I came across another story about because the Graveyard Book, the graphic novel of the Graveyard Book was banned.
Neil Gaiman.
And when asked about it, Neil Gaiman said, now that it's been banned, I bet a lot more people are going to read it.
Right.
And he's right on the money there. But to pull it back to what we were saying about Seduction of the Innocent and Wortham, think about that wasn't just, you know, taking some comics off the shelf or changing its designation to adult rather than teen, that kind of thing. This was industry-wide changes that changed how comic books were written for decades.
Yes.
And that stifles creativity. It hurts artists because they can't tell the stories they want to tell. And it's not up to us to decide what stories people can tell. It's up to us to decide whether we want to read it or not.
Well, and it's up to, yeah. And so, I mean, some of these, like when I look through stuff, I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Certain, you know, titles make sense, you know, like a Daniel Chloe's book Does it actually belong in a high school library? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not, but for someone to say that it shouldn't be there for anybody who wants to read it is where it becomes problematic. When you start banning, like, genderqueer, I know has some complications. I understand that. I'm very aware that there are some images in there that, and I haven't read it, so I don't know, but I understand. I've seen reasonable people support the book being available in libraries who have also come out and said, but this is not for young kids. You know, not saying that they want to ban it, but saying, you know, reasonably speaking, maybe this isn't for a 7-year-old.
Exactly. But it is geared at it.
That's why we put faith in librarians.
Yeah. But it is geared at a teen audience, and it's geared at people. Well, it was written as an explanation to the writer's family to say, yes, this is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important. It's important for people to not shield themselves from the things they don't want to think about.
Well, and it's important for kids to, like, again, to go back to Mouths, which is the one that, and Persepolis also is another one. Those are being banned because some people are having SADs that it makes them feel bad.
Yeah, that's the point.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to feel bad about that. I mean, I saw one argument against Mouths, which is it's anti-ethnic. Yeah, that's the Holocaust. That's the point.
But it's when you have, and this is the problem, when you have comics being banned for political reasons and right, not necessarily, is this content age appropriate? Like, exactly. Age appropriate is one thing, but for political reasons and telling kids, and by kids, I mean, I'm talking like 17-year-olds too. You know, I'm like, well, everybody's a kid to me now. This is what's disturbing, and this is why, looking back at what happened lo these many years ago with Seduction of the Innocent and the ebb and flow of censorship, and comics, I think, are an easy target.
Well, there's still this notion that comics are for kids, that it's it's for elementary school kids, and that's what comics are for, and we're all grown-up man babies for liking comics, and not respecting it as an art form and as literature.
Right.
So that's what makes it an easy target to say, if it's a comic, therefore it's for kids. And if you have violent or sexual imagery in a comic, therefore it's geared at kids.
Yeah.
And that's just not how things work. It's too easy to just, and again, what you said was spot on, is done for political reasons.
Yeah.
We're putting literature right up next to, you know, which bathroom you can use. Yeah. And it's disparaging.
We're in culture wars again. And again, I don't want to speak for individual parents for what they want their kids to read. I can't, that's not right. But you can't tell everybody they can't read Mouths.
Right. So me as a parent,
everybody they can't read Genderqueer. You can't tell everybody they can't read Bone.
Right. So I can say, me as a parent, I don't want my kid to read Bone. But I can't tell every parent that your kids can't read it either. If my kid can't read it, your kids can't read it.
Yeah.
That's up to the individual.
That's
parent.
Where we're at.
I know. I mean, look, you know, basically Florida's libraries have just been cleared out.
Yeah.
I'm being hyperbolic, of course, but.
Well, I mean, close. I mean, we're not even talking about, you know, all the great literature that's being cleared out. We're focusing on the comics. Yeah. And there's a lot more than just, you know, the ones we're talking about now. I mean, there's Barefoot Jen, there's Blankets by Craig Thompson, right, like Dragon Ball. They're going after any little thing. You know, thank goodness for the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, and thank goodness for places like the American Library Association who are tracking this or keeping their eye on this and are keeping people informed. It's important to know when, like, books are being denied to people who are mature enough or whose parents are fine with them reading it.
Exactly. And I do want
to to be honest, I understand. I read a bunch of stuff as a kid, like I said, the Allen Ginsberg, but even comics and, you know, whatever else. I read a bunch of stuff as a kid that I don't think my mom would have approved of.
Right. Well, I mean, just just for me and but just reading. Yeah, for me, for just for read all the horror stuff I read as a kid, I probably shouldn't have been reading it, but it was great. And it really, you know, it challenged me. It scared me. But even, you know, I remember very young reading Catcher in the Rye and thinking that was, you know, I wanted to be Holden Caulfield for a long time until I realized he's an idiot. But
we had to get permission. This is back in the 80s when I read Catcher in the Rye, and I read it for high school. But we had to get permission, even in the 80s, to read it.
We had to give permission to my daughter to read The Outsiders. And this is in the 2000s.
Jeez.
Yeah. I know. S.E. Hinton, for goodness sakes. Yeah, we had to, you know, little permission slips to say, yes, this could be taught. Yeah. You know, because it's got violence in the gangs and everything, you know. So, I mean, that's a good thing. That's a good way to think about it. S.E. Hinton wrote that as a teenager, but it's being banned from teenagers.
I mean, we're not solving anything here. I think that this is all very concerning. And I think that in particular, genderqueer being kind of trotted out as, you know, the poster child for banning books is really, really problematic, because by all accounts, this book is really, really, really helpful and to young LGBTQ, et cetera, kids. It just, to keep a book that may save lives
right
out of the hands of the people whose lives it might save is distressing.
Absolutely.
So that's, you know, call me whatever pejorative you want on the matter. I'll take that. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, the more you know, the more empathetic you can be.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I attempted to raise my child to empathize with other people, be given more knowledge than I was given. You know, the world becomes a better place when everybody understands each other, at least a little bit.
Yeah.
And we do that through telling stories. And we do that through reading and through literature.
Because stories become shared experiences.
You're, exactly.
You're sharing them not just with the author and what the author is trying to convey, but you're sharing it with those around you and commonality.
We started this whole conversation off with a joke about how we want a different reality and we're not okay with the way things are. Well, the way we change things is that we tell each other our stories, and we try to understand one another. And we do that through books and through poems and through pictures and art and in general. So we shouldn't take it away from each other.
Well, we solved the problem.
Unfortunately, I don't think we did.
I think things are going to get worse.
I don't want to end this segment on.
And that's the hopeful period of the podcast. Yes. Well, no, we're going to end it on lots of punching and flying sphinxes and chronocycles and.
And you're my forever crystal. On that note, let's take a break. Let's try to get into a happier mode before we get, and we'll talk about time traveling shenanigans.
Yes.
Need a podcast talking about weird stuff? Well, then we've got just the thing for you. Into the Weird, a podcast chronicling the madness and magnificence of the mighty Marvel Bronze Age of comics, featuring the voice talents of Mr. Billy Delicious.
Hola.
Mr. Herman Hellstrom Lowe.
Hey there.
And straight from the Long Box of Darkness, His Infernal Majesty Dormammu.
How are you?
And many more. But wait a minute. You might be thinking, aren't all comics infused with a grain of weirdness? I mean, Reed Richards can stretch every single part of his body, right? And why did Ultron design the Vision with working genitalia? Well, you would be correct, but Into the Weird isn't just any regular comic book show, folks. We focus on the really bizarre. Here are a few examples.
A sword and sorcery barbarian grown spontaneously from a jar of peanut butter.
A duck running for president of the United States.
Benjamin Franklin playing hide the sausage with Doctor Strange's girlfriend, Clea.
A giant-sized man-thing lamenting the death of a clown.
A serial killer obsessed with killing only fools, dressed as cavalier with laser guns after witnessing a priest fornicating.
and so much more. So if you like the wonderful weirdness of the Bronze Age from 1970 to 1985, and characters such as Ghost Rider, Morbius, The Defenders, Man-Thing, Son of Satan, Skull the Slayer, Killraven, Howard the Duck, and the weird granddaddy of them all, Dr. Stephen Strange, then this is the show for you.
ITW's on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and TuneIn. Hit subscribe and join us for a comic-filled jaunt into the weird.
And we're back. So, Paul, today we are reading your recommendation, Avengers Forever. Would you like to tell us a little bit about it?
I will attempt it. Life comes at you fast. There's so many things happening and so many details to keep track of, you might find yourself stopping at some point to ask, what the hell is going on? And when that happens, you will no doubt find that there are a multitude of people who are more than happy to explain what the hell is going on to you. But inevitably, when that happens, you'll soon find out that the hell one person thinks is going on will disagree with another person's idea of the hell that's going on. And soon, you'll be inundated with an abundance of hells going on. So much so that it will be nigh impossible to determine which of the hells is the actual hell that is going on, making the answer to the question, what the hell is going on, a living hell. That, my friends, is what it's like reading Avengers Forever. Avengers Forever is a 1999 12-issue limited series written by Kurt Busiek and Roger Stern and drawn by Carlos Pacheco, and it attempts the humble goal of trying to tie up every loose end in the Marvel Universe ever. It's a sprawling time travel epic that touches on or references most of the major events in Marvel's history and attempts to make sense of it all and place it into a concise narrative timeline. In doing this, the plot gets a bit intricate. That being said, you don't need to know the history and lore of the Marvel Universe to enjoy reading Avengers Forever, but it does help. The story revolves around Kang the Conqueror and his attempt to thwart Immortus from erasing events from history. This is complicated because Immortus is Kang. That is, he's a future version of Kang that Kang does not wish to become. And eventually, when a team of Avengers gathered throughout time try to stop all the time-changing shenanigans, they're placed in a giant flying time machine shaped like a sphinx that once belonged to Rama Tut, who is also Kang, that is, a younger version of Kang, who later becomes an older version of Kang before becoming Kang again, who eventually becomes Immortus. All of which reinforces that comics are weird. The Avengers team that is assembled seems random and mismatched. A disillusioned Captain America, a misogynist Yellow Jacket, a shirtless Hawkeye, future versions of Captain Marvel and Songbird, a gentle giant man, and a kick-ass Wasp. And this team is tasked with protecting Rick Jones, the most boring character in all of Marvel Comics, but who, inexplicably, has a major role to play in every Marvel event from the 60s through the 90s and up till today. In all the confusing things in this comic, this might be the most confusing of all. Together with the help of Libra, a former villain who wears monk's robes and VR goggles and has the powers of prognostication akin to shaking a magic eight ball, they must navigate various periods of history and piece together the mystery of what the Kangs want with Rick Jones, what power he could be concealing, and what terrible future could be waiting if nothing is done. Along the way, they encounter cowboys, dinosaurs, space phantoms, the War of the Worlds, Richard Nixon, aliens and gods, and every Avenger that ever existed or possibly could exist in all realities. Avengers Forever is a complicated story. It's confusing, sometimes perplexing, and relies on having at least a passing knowledge of Marvel's history. But it's also a fun romp. Busiek does an outstanding job of explaining that convoluted and often contradictory history while moving the plot forward and telling an entertaining story, and adding a few twists of his own. And Pacheco makes every panel dynamic and interesting with splash pages that will take your breath away. This is a dense story with lots of lore and Easter eggs, and you're probably not going to understand everything that's going on. But strap in, let yourself take the ride, and you will not be disappointed. And you might still be asking, what the hell is going on? But when the ride is this much fun, it might not matter. Brian, what did you think of Avengers Forever?
This is, without a doubt, the marvelest of Marvel comics I've ever read. This is everything that Marvel is, from the Avengers being basically idiots to a long emotive dialogue to massive battle scenes to, like you said, convoluted history. It's stunning in its marvelness.
Yes. So this is something I was trying to figure out. Is this Marvel's attempt at Crisis on Infinite Earths to try to take all, because the Avengers is sprawling, because there's so many characters in the Avengers and their team changes so many times. And just take the character of Kang, who, because you have Rambutan, Kang, Immortus, who else is in, you know, Nathaniel Richards, Crimson Dynamo. These were all separate characters who eventually all became Kang.
Right. And don't forget Dr. Doom.
And Dr. Doom,
well, who may or may not be Kang. It depends on what revision of the Marvel Universe exists, right? This one kind of poo-poos the Doom as Kang.
Yeah. Doom yeah, because it kind of just says, you might be a relative, you might not be. I don't know.
Right.
And eventually, I think Iron Lad becomes a future or a previous version of Kang as well, and if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, so just that in and of itself. But the Avengers is full of crazy crap.
Right.
And I'm just reading this and I'm just like, okay, are you just trying to condense it all and to make it, you know, to take all this and just make it all fit into one storyline?
It's weird that you mentioned this because, like, my very top in my themes notes, my very top thing is this just a holding spot for Marvel history and the who's who? Because it feels very much like that. It's like, because there's these long bits in this comic that are just trying to, it reminds me a little bit of, you know, the X books, the Paradise X and Earth X and Universe X, which also tries to do this. I think that I would not compare this to Crisis, because Crisis was I think it's hard to compare anything to Crisis because Crisis is Crisis.
Yeah.
And,
well, I did an attempt at it.
I think the issue with Crisis is that it brought in basically the entirety of the DC universe, but also used them significantly. And it also didn't focus, but, you know, the big three were a major part of this. This, and I'll get this out of the way right at the bat. The choice of the Avengers used, I feel like, had to be editorial in some ways. This was not an inspiring group of Avengers.
Well, no, and I think
that is not a rip on the entire series, but when I think of the Avengers and then this is what we get, ooh, wow, that's exciting.
I think, you know, and it's kind of tied up at the end of why these were chosen, and it sort of works. I think it's a novel attempt at, you know, taking some lesser known or lesser appreciated characters.
Right.
And trying to make them more important. You know, there's reasons behind why they were chosen. I don't think all of it works. Like, you know, to jump to the end, you know, with the reason Captain America is his disillusioned Cap is chosen is so he won't take charge and Wasp can lead the group. I mean, sure, that kind of works.
Yeah. I mean, Wasp is great. But
Wasp is awesome in this, yeah.
Outside of Captain America, this isn't the A-Team Avengers. I was kind of like, do we really need to revisit Yellow Jacket?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's sort of the Guy Gardner of the Marvel Universe without being funny.
Right, yeah, because nothing about Yellow Jacket's funny.
Yeah, Yellow Jacket's awful. And again, it's explained away as in, oh, we needed that because we knew he would betray the team and that would get us to a certain... No, you don't. You don't need to do that. You put him in there to add conflict. That's it. That's his role in there, is to be the spur on your heel.
But having to have Janet Van Dyne like revisit and interact with Yellow Jacket again was little... Ugh.
There's even a panel that recreates the slap.
Yeah.
So again, I understand the reasoning behind it. Yeah. Doesn't always work.
With that said, you are... I am no Marvel scholar.
I know quite a bit about Marvel's history, especially the time periods that they're talking about, the 60s and 70s, primarily. I'm good with this. And I'm reading it going, even I don't know what that is. There is in the back of in the trade that that we read, there is, you know, a issue by issue explanation of the references at the end.
Yes, yeah, which was actually very helpful.
It was incredibly helpful.
I'm glad they put it there and didn't try to pull a, you know, David Foster Wallace on us and do footnotes about footnotes.
No, it was very helpful, and I didn't go through every single reference, obviously. At one point, I was trying to take notes to try to figure out every reference, and then I just said, you know what, I'm just like I said in the intro, strap in, enjoy the ride.
And yeah. Some of my notes, like when I was taking notes on this, are it's just a page of me going, you know, a bunch of exposition and fighting. And that's the best I could muster.
I mean, there's a whole issue just explaining Kang's origins and, you know, and who he is. I mean, that says a lot about a character that you're so confusing that you need an entire issue just to get it straight in the reader's heads of who this person is.
Well, and I would like to state, Kang, he's the biggest badass in this series. Like, hands down. I mean, this cat is, like, money. He's supposed to be the villain. Well, you know, he's one of the big bads in the Marvel Universe. But this guy, I mean, how many different times is it just Kang versus, like, thousands of people? And he's just standing there with his guns blazing away, like, amidst the rubble, taking down everybody. I mean... I'm like sitting here going like, this guy is the greatest action star of all time.
Yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger ain't got nothing on him.
Yeah.
It's a funny, and in that one issue explaining his origins, it starts with him just moping around going, oh, it's too easy. I've done everything. I've beaten everybody. Having a little existential crisis about how great he is. Now, I have made my disdain of Rick Jones. Why is he a character?
He's Zelig. Right?
He's Zeppo.
He says that's even more. Yeah, I was going with, like, he's always present and everything, and then he just whines through, like, the entire history of the Marvel Universe, but he's always there somewhere in the background.
If you leave the Sphinx, you'll destroy the universe. But I want to leave. Shut up! You have one job, and that is to stay home. That's it. I was getting lockdown vibes of like just all we have to do is stay home to beat the pandemic. Just stay home. Rick, to save the universe, all you have to do is watch TV. Like, why is that so hard?
Yeah, every scene is him either whining about having to stay behind or then not staying behind.
Exactly.
And this is the other issue with the Avengers. It's like, there's numerous scenes where they're being told by Libra or the Supreme Intelligence or whoever else, they're like, just do this one thing and everything will be fine. And all the Avengers are all like, no, we don't stay. We go fight.
And this happens
numerous times where the Avengers are like, nope. So it's not just Rick Jones.
And you even have Captain Marvel, who's from the future and knows how everything comes out. He says, listen, I think if we just do this one thing, we'll change, you know, we'll change history. And they're like, oh, no, we're just not going to listen to you who knows the actual outcome.
Don't get me wrong. All of this is fun. I enjoyed this comic. This is a hoot.
Oh, yeah, it is. There's a lot of fun things that happen. OK, we're not going to go beat for beat because there's too much in this. Right. But we'll go to some of the bigger set pieces. The whole thing starts off with Rick Jones being brought to the blue side of the moon to get a diagnosis from the great intelligence, you know, as you do. He is then attacked by Immortus. So Immortus is trying to kill Rick Jones because he will somehow affect the future, which we get a glimpse of in a prologue where the descendants of Rick Jones are totalitarian leaders. It's complicated. So anyway, Immortus is trying to kill Rick Jones to change the future. And Kang wants to protect Rick Jones because he disagrees with anything Immortus wants to do. Because Kang doesn't want to become Immortus, so he'll do anything to change that future. Again, it's complicated. As I attempt to say it out loud, it makes perfect sense in my brain.
Yeah, well, I mean, and there's a bigger theme here, which we'll hit, but I'll just reference it. This is an odd, it's free will versus...
Right. Yeah, we'll get summed up quite nicely at the end by Cap. In the midst of this, Rick Jones, who... If we all recall from our episode on the Kree-Skrull War, he was given the Destiny Force back in the day, which is a thing that you can do stuff with. Apparently it can be shared, except when it can't.
Right.
It is the power of the MacGuffin. I would love, just as an aside, I would love a comic book character, a superhero named the MacGuffin.
Well, that'll be our, when we create a comic book, Paul, we'll, it'll be the MacGuffin.
Yes, he just shows up to get the story started, but doesn't actually do anything.
Sidekick the red herring.
I love it. This is it. So anyway, Rick reaches out throughout time and space and pulls in the Avengers that are best suited to help this situation. Okay, before we continue, there's also Libra. Explain to me Libra's powers.
He does balance stuff.
Yeah, he does balance stuff.
He affects balance, except he doesn't. He just suggests that balance should be affected. I think that's his power.
Yeah, yeah. He can see the future, kind of, sort of.
And, well, he can turn sideways and disappear.
He can turn sideways and disappear.
He turns sideways and disappears.
Yes. I think I kept thinking of it as crap Destiny of the Endless. Yeah. If he was Destiny, but actually didn't have any powers and didn't do anything. No, I mean, so Libra's there just as the guy to spout cryptic information and move everybody along.
He's part of the Kang Libra Supreme Intelligence group that are opposing Immortus. Because we haven't mentioned, I mean, the Supreme Intelligence is along for the ride as well. Later, literally along for the ride.
That's a brilliant scene, which we will get to. Anyway,
we have Libra pontificating. We have the Supreme Intelligence pontificating.
Yeah, there's lots of, this is what we should do in order to save the universe. So the Avengers do the exact opposite, and they try to attack Immortus in the land of forever, the heart of forever.
The heart of forever.
Right.
Sometimes, am I a limbo? Am I in the chronosphere? Am I in...
The Avengers basically get pulled out of time in order to... Their job is to protect Rick Jones, and they go out of their way to
not... Rick Jones from being killed, and then they proceed to do everything in their power to get Rick Jones killed.
Exactly.
Because they're Avengers and they don't hide.
That's right. They got to do stuff or they're not really Avengers. And I do like this, that Immortus pulls an army of armies from throughout history to attack them. The worst armies that there ever were. And that's really cool. I love that as a concept.
It is.
Yeah.
And then Kang just sits there with two giant guns in his hands, blowing them all away.
But the Avengers don't kill anybody. They just let Immortus do that, or Kang do that. So anyway, they attempt to go, correct me if I'm wrong, that no matter what the Avengers do, they don't actually do anything.
No.
No.
So they just run around and fight.
So they try to fight a lot of people in the Land of Forever. That's not what it's called, by the way. And they fight all these armies, which allows Immortus to get the Heart of Forever, which then he molds into the Crystal of Forever.
The Forever Crystal.
The Forever Crystal. That's what it
is. Because that's different than the heart, because now it's a crystal that he can carry around.
Which allows him to erase moments from history, right? and erase timelines from history. This I found really interesting, because this is actually what the MCU is using in their storylines now, as far as how time travel works. If anyone's seen, has anyone seen Endgame? I know it's a pretty obscure movie. I don't think anyone's really seen it.
No, I haven't heard of it.
Well, the way the Hulk explains, he explains how time travel works, which is exactly how it's explained, almost word for word, in this comic. Whereas if you go into the past, the future now becomes your past, and you basically create a new timeline.
Except we're also told that you can't affect the past by traveling to it. There's a point in the comic where they say that.
Well, yes.
Except now you can if you have the crystal, the Forever Crystal.
Exactly. So the Forever Crystal allows you to actually affect the past and not create new timelines and to prune and remove timelines like they do in Loki. I think, you know, it's interesting that the movies now are drawing very heavily, well, I mean, from this comic, but from that concept.
My question also is, like, so Immortus gets the Forever Crystal, and since he can immediately start changing time, but then he waits, why doesn't he just, like, he gets it, why doesn't he just say, okay, I got it, everything's changed? He allows the Avengers time.
Because this team of Avengers are actually outside of time. So even if Immortus changes time, it can't affect them because they're not in time. they're outside the timeline, which means Rick Jones still exists. So no matter what Immortus does, the major problem, which is Rick Jones.
And then there's Rick Jones, who can sometimes walk and sometimes can't.
He's injured and can't walk, but he uses his destiny force to will himself to be able to walk. So now Immortus has the Forever Crystal, which allows him to start changing time. And this is, I find, interesting just from a meta situation. The Outside of Time TV set that the Avengers now have on the Time Travel Sphinx. These are words that are coming out of my mouth, Brian.
Yes, I know.
They're able to see various events on the timeline, which now Immortus has placed himself into. Am I getting that right?
So, yes, no. And they're watching. Well, this has always been, I never know where the cameras are at any given time. When in the history of comics, when people are watching things happen on a TV screen, and I'm like, how do they see this?
Yeah, this is edited really well. You know, and this is where we get into the thing is like, is this a crisis type of comic? Because all these disparate storylines are now being nicely placed into a single timeline. So right. Everything from the Fantastic Four and all their origins and various stories of the Avengers stories. Because remember, Marvel Comics has been this sprawling thing for a long time. And when this was written in 99, I mean, they had been around 30 plus years and multiple writers and various artists. And the stories got so sprawling and so convoluted. I mean, the Avengers are one thing, but think about the X-Men.
Right.
Those stories got crazy weird and contradicted each other and so forth.
Right. Fantastic Four as well.
Yeah.
To a minute ago. So, yeah, I mean, it's just.
And then Iron Man and Daredevil and all kinds of stuff are just happening. And this is attempting to push it all into one cohesive storyline, the sacred timeline, you could say. So anyway, I thought that was very interesting, like I said, on a meta level. Probably one of the best things about this comic is the Avengers get to have a little home base in a time machine shaped like the Sphinx.
I love the imagery. It's just this. It's just a giant Sphinx flying through space.
And this is a Kirby thing. So in an early Fantastic Four story, when Rama Tut is introduced, this is so Kirby.
Right.
A time traveling Sphinx, and it's wonderful. It actually is quite good. There's a wonderful splash page just of the Sphinx flying through space, right at you, right at the viewer.
And there's an even better Kirby moment coming up.
Of what do you reference?
The Supreme Cycle.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We'll get there, sir.
Supreme Cycle.
Yes. So they decide, they figure out, the Avengers, that is, figure out how to navigate the time-traveling Sphinx. And there are chronospheres, which are little pods that allow them to travel through different periods of time. And this is where we kind of go off on these missions, if you want to call them that.
Yeah, so for some reason, they think I'm not sure I quite understood why they had to do this. So Giant Man says, hey, there's three weird chrono anomalies, and somehow this is important.
Yes.
It's never really explained to me why. I mean, maybe it is, but perhaps I wasn't doing careful reading. So then they have to split up in teams, right, to go to these weird chronomalies.
Yeah, so anomalies in time, that things that shouldn't exist but do in our reality. They're doing this so that they can go to different time periods and have cool little set pieces.
Right.
The in-story explanation is, I guess, they're trying to gather information to figure out why Rick is important.
Kinda.
So anyway, they travel off in their little spheres of time. To do these little missions. The first group, which is Captain America, Giant Man, so they go off and they have an alternative future, a dystopian future where Martians have attacked. Okay,
so literally this is Martians from War of the Worlds.
This is back when Marvel had the rights to adapt War of the Worlds, which is what they did, and it was Kirby adapted War of the Worlds as a comic. But because it's Marvel, they couldn't just have a standalone story. It had to be integrated into the Marvel universe.
Well, that makes sense now. See, I did not know this.
Yeah, this is like what we did when we did Godzilla. Remember, they got the rights to Godzilla and they had to have the Marvel universe interacting with Godzilla. So they had to have the Marvel universe interacting with War of the Worlds, which is where Killraven, the character of Killraven, was created. eventually, as everything happens with Marvel, they lost the rights. So they can't actually talk about the War of the Worlds anymore, but they still had Killraven. Mm-hmm. And they could still do tripods, spaceships.
Well, this is what also is fascinating. So the Captain America, Giant Man are in the future, and they meet up with the band of the remnants of humanity, which we find out is like 50,000 people left on Earth.
Right. They're all in New York.
And all of them are in New York. Thank you. 50,000 people left on Earth, and they're all hanging out in New York.
Well, I mean, obviously, when there's a dystopia going on, we're all going to be migrating to New York.
While I'm reading a comic book about time travel, this is the part where I really had to suspend my disbelief. This is the one moment where I was like, this is pushing my willing suspension of disbelief.
I think it's still pretty fun because you have Black Panther and Killraven and Thundra.
Pregnant Jocasta.
Yes, Jocasta. It's really interesting, I think. And it allows Cap, who's, you know, he's in that disillusioned state. It's right after Secret War. It's, you know, it's funny. We've covered a lot of these stories on this podcast. Well, we did Kree-Skrull War. We did Secret Empire. We did. You know, so it's kind of fun. You know, so anyway, Cap is disillusioned after the events of Secret Empire. And this allows him to get his hope back. So there are reasons why these things are happening. These storylines are happening.
Sure. There's some character building that's being done.
Exactly. Exactly. It's not all ridiculous. There are reasons for this. Meanwhile, we got Songbird, Yellowjacket, and Hawkeye traveling to the Old West, where we get to meet all of the Western heroes of Marvel.
All the kids.
All the kids. You got the Kid Colt. You got the Rawhide Kid. You got the Two-Gun Kid. You got Kid
Every
Cassidy.
Every single one of them has Kid in their name.
Well, no. Come on. You got Reno Jones.
Okay.
You have Knight Rider.
Right.
Who is the first Ghost Rider. I might be recommending that story somewhere along the line. But anyway, so it's neat to see all that. And then, of course, okay, Brian, this is where I was thinking, this comic book is like hearing a story told by a child. You know, and then the Avengers go to the Old West and there were cowboys and a dinosaur showed up. And then there was a butterfly woman and Martians. Everything just keeps being thrown at us.
The Westwood, and of course, when they get there, they realize there's not an anomaly. This is a thing that actually happened in the Marvel history, and so they can't interfere because Kang is there, but not the Kang they're dealing with. This is a different Kang.
Yeah, this is actually a story that happened. This is actually a comic that happens where the Western heroes actually meet up with the Avengers and a dinosaur and Kang and all that. This is a real story that happens in the Avengers back in the 70s.
So they can't interfere.
They can't interfere because
they have to let this story play out. But what happens at some point is this is where we get the Space Phantom.
Space Phantoms, which are, they're basically just Skrulls.
They're more googly-eyed.
Yes, they have that more weaselly look with Wolverine hair.
Yeah, so... Basically, like, so this whole arc where they're in the Wild West is just a chance to like throw out a bunch of Western heroes and dinosaurs, like you said, and what have you. And then the ultimate thing is that they just find themselves a Space Phantom who will be useful later to spend an entire issue reiterating the history of the Marvel Universe.
Yes. So the entire history of the Marvel Universe it's all Space Phantoms.
Yeah, it's Immortus, all Space Phantoms.
Yeah, Immortus created Space Phantoms too. It's all trying to get the timeline all working into one cohesive story. And meanwhile, in the 1950s, Captain Marvel, he and Wasp go into the 1950s to check out that anomaly. I did think this was an interesting nod. The way they're dressed is obviously, it's Clark Kent and Lois Lane.
It's Clark and Lois.
Nice little fun nod. Where they go to a carnival where Richard Nixon is going to show up, because that's a thing that happens. And at the carnival, we get an alternate Avengers team, which is the Agents of Atlas. They're really throwing everything they can into this comic.
It's spaghetti on the wall.
It is. So we find out that the Agents of Atlas, who are now an alternate version of the Avengers.
Three Avengers.
Yes, and they're there to protect Nixon. But Nixon is actually a Skrull. And Captain Marvel's cosmic awareness. which is not like spider sense at all. Anyway, so his cosmic awareness tells him that Richard Nixon is actually a Skrull long before he becomes... See, this is so weird. Nixon is a Skrull, but also in the Secret Empire arc, he's the head of the Secret Empire, who ends up killing himself. The Richard Nixon we know is actually an imitation in order to hide the fact that he was the head of the Secret Empire. But it turns out he was really a Skrull. Comics are weird, Brian.
Yeah, but so at some point then Immortus just shows up, right? And erases that timeline.
Timeline's gone.
Which is why we only have the Avengers in the 60s and not the Agents of Atlas as Avengers in the 50s. So they create a thing that didn't actually exist in Marvel history, just so then they can destroy it and say, hey, these are
the stakes. Yeah, things can get erased.
But they're not correcting anything in the comic. If this comic was a corrective, like Crisis, this isn't a corrective because the thing didn't actually exist that for them to fix.
They're just tightening up some of the other storylines, I guess. It was a fun little moment of the Wasp and Captain Marvel trying to escape the erasure of time, which is neat. There are really fun set pieces here, and the art is fantastic. I do want to just take a moment to shout out Carlos Pacheco's art.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the art is fantastic. It's widescreen before widescreen was kind of... Well, no, I mean, widescreen existed. This is what... This is such a 90s comic, too.
Yeah, I loved every panel of this. It's just there's so much to look at. And
it's great art and delivered on time. 12-issue series didn't last 4 years.
Remember that? Those are the days. So after all these shenanigans, what was the deal with the butterfly lady?
She was sad.
Yeah, so they go to Wakanda in the alternate future, War of the Worlds future. They have to go to Wakanda to get some vibranium, the last of the vibranium, but they find a butterfly creature living in there trying to hatch their eggs who mm-hmm. feed on vibranium.
And Jocasta was about to have her baby, and so Black Panther had to make a decision about... Black Panther wanted to go off into space and kill all the Martians, but he only had enough vibranium to either go off into space to kill the Martians or to... help Jocasta have her baby and to save Butterfly Lady
and the butterfly.
So Captain children. America talks him into doing the right thing, which was choose life.
And by choosing life, we end all humanity.
And so then Butterfly Lady is happy and Jocasta has a baby.
To be fair, this actually foreshadows what's going to happen later. There's lots of foreshadowing here, you know, plot points that happen later. The children of Wanda Maximoff and Vision are important to the story. And this kind of foreshadows that, yes, synthoids can have children. So there's a method to this madness, Brian.
Sure, yes.
Sure. The Western shenanigans get tied up pretty easily because Hawkeye can figure out that some of the Western heroes were actually space phantoms. There's lots of character building moments, like we said, but these little vignettes actually go kind of nowhere, unless you disagree.
No, I feel like there's a lot of things in this that don't end up really going anywhere.
It's very cool. I mean, the art's amazing, and then there's some great action. Yeah, but ultimately, they don't really go anywhere other than to build some character moments. Okay, so for a couple of guys who don't want to go beat for beat, we always tend to do that. So let's just move along. Let's move along a little bit. The Avengers team has to... So two things that leading up to the epic final battle. The Avengers first have to go to Limbo, where they're separated in an M.C. Escher world, and they each have to face their own fears. It's a nice little, again, more character building moments where we kind of get an insight into how each one of the Avengers are feeling.
Right.
Which then propels them along. At one point during this, Hawkeye does say, "Welcome to Confusion Central." And that just kind of, you know, it's like at least the writers know. Yeah, this is a little complicated, guys.
He also has a great quote, and I wrote it down. He says, "Doesn't anyone stay dead anymore?"
That's right. Yes. So the Avengers have to keep moving on, and they come up with this plan, and they're going to try to take down Immortus. But Yellowjacket has his sudden but inevitable betrayal, and all the Avengers get captured by Immortus, who then takes them to the Timekeepers, where we get a very long extended explanation of the Marvel Universe and why it needs to be eradicated and simplified.
And we find out that this is all about space travel.
Yes, because the reason Rick Jones is important is because he has the Destiny Force, which we learned about in the Kree-Skrull War. Mm-hmm. This is eventually going to manifest itself where he becomes a space dictator and creates an army of stormtroopers based on the Avengers, who then subjugate the entire universe.
What appears to be a lot of mass genocide.
So the Timekeepers want to eradicate, you know, this timeline and just...
So this was the whole impetus for all of this, is Immortus and the Timekeepers are trying to prevent the humanity from traveling to space.
They're trying to stop space Avenger Nazis.
Yeah.
Probably a good thing.
Well, I mean, there's some, like, moral interesting themes to, like, which one of these sides is right? I guess we'll get to that, but...
This is where we get into the major theme of the comic, I think, which is free will versus determinism. Do the Timekeepers have the right to determine the future of humanity? Or does humanity have the right to choose its own future?
Right. And we have the two different sides. Obviously, it's Supreme Intelligence, and Kang and Libra are for free will, I think. And Immortus and the Timekeepers are more for determinism.
Immortus and the Timekeepers was my favorite fusion jazz band from the 70s. And of course, you have Team Captain America, who's all about, you know, freedom and self-determination. So they're kind of, the Avengers are kind of put on trial because they're the ones apparently who are going to be the impetus of this space Nazis. But they start asking about percentages. How much of all the realities out there, which are the ones that go bad? And it's
42%.
So which Cap says, well, that's less than half, which means we have a more likely chance of not being bad. They talk about possibilities. Yes, there is a possibility humanity will be bad, but there's a possibility humanity will do great things. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff about Wanda Maximoff's baby and Mephisto and the right. Devil, which gets into, you know, that's another deep dive into Marvel lore.
Right. And, you know, it's they have that thing about Wanda being, I can't remember the word they used.
She's a Nexus being.
Right. But, and so there's this whole part of this where, again, it's just a lot of exposition, and the Vision gets involved and the Human Torch gets involved. And I was like, okay, well, what does all this mean? And then nothing.
Well, no, I disagree with that, because they talk about how the Human Torch, again, this is a convoluted backstory where Ultron created the Vision, but created the Vision using the Human Torch's body. But then another writer wanted to bring the Human Torch back again. This is the android Human Torch.
Right.
So there's the writers are trying to streamline that storyline, which got a little convoluted in the 70s. And they did that by saying, well, there's two timelines. They're actually, the Vision is the Human Torch, but the Human Torch still exists. That allows for Kang and Immortus to be separated. And now going forward, we can have two villains, Immortus being his own being and Kang being his own being. So, I mean, from a writing perspective, they foreshadowed what happened with the Vision and the Human Torch, and then allowed that to happen with Immortus and Kang. As far as the Marvel Universe, the actual comic books are concerned, that's a good thing that you now have these two villains who were conflated at one point are now separate again, and you can use them in different stories.
Right.
It's you know, getting back to that semi-crisis fix.
Yeah. And that's kind of the end result of this, is like when we get, we have like a lot of battle sequences. We have a lot of what eventually, and there's that horrific scene where the Timekeepers are trying to turn Kang into Immortus, and like his body is being rent apart. Of course, the end result is that because Kang is Kang and he perseveres, but then like the goo that was growing on him sloughs off and that becomes Immortus.
Right. So it's very Cronenberg body horror kind of thing.
Yeah, very. To your point is then we get Kang freed from the shackles of what he is to become. And Immortus is freed from the shackles of what he had been.
Exactly. Going forward into future stories, Kang can be that badass you were talking about, and Immortus can still be his own villain. You know, it's from a writing standpoint, it was actually quite well done.
Which also leads to like one of the best lines ever when Kang is finally freed and he's got his guns in hand and he says the great phrase, Kang conquers.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay, now let's get to that Destiny War. We're kind of skipping ahead to the end and we're missing the best part of this entire comic, which is we get to the Destiny War. And so the Avengers are freed. Yellowjacket sees the error of his ways and he frees the Avengers to fight to try to get to the timekeepers and not allow them to end the future of humanity. So the timekeepers bring in every Avenger that ever existed or possibly will exist to come and fight.
The bad Avengers,
but then the good Avengers come too. And in comes to the rescue, Rick Jones, Kang the Conqueror, and the Great Intelligence.
The Supreme Intelligence,
sorry. Flying in on
a giant space motorcycle.
It's like a tricycle. Mm-hmm. And it is, you were right, an incredibly Kirby looking thing.
Call it the Supreme Cycle.
The Supreme Cycle. It's amazing. And they come flying in to save the day.
It's even better than the Flying Sphinx.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Because it's a motorized tricycle with a giant head and a vat.
It's Kirby.
Yes, it is. So we have this massive battle, and it is drawn. There are so many things going on. I mean,
your crisis moment, right, where it's like every single heat character in the Marvel Universe is not every single one, but you know what, it's an attempt to represent virtually every Avenger.
Yeah, and possible Avengers. And
several pages.
Yes, and it's just, it's really cool. I mean, I love this kind of thing. This is what we saw in JLA Avengers, that kind of, you know, massive battles with multiple characters all kind of doing things in the background, in the foreground. And these last two issues, I think, are just, you know, stunning to look at and so much fun. So, of course, we get this massive battle. You find out that Captain Marvel actually has an older Rick Jones who can't hurt anyone because he's armless. I don't know if this was built up enough for you, because you have all this thing about Captain Marvel. Jenis Vell is reluctant to acknowledge his future, but he finally accepts it at the end.
Right.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. That was kind of anticlimactic for me, but you do get to have old Rick Jones and young Rick Jones kind of fight side by side.
Right.
And the young Rick Jones does have the very good line of, "Is this? Am I really this annoying to everybody else?" And I had to say, "Yes, Rick, you are." I really don't like Rick Jones.
Me neither.
So in the end, I thought this was actually quite good. So finally, after this epic battle, Captain America finally gets to the Forever Crystal and he holds it in his hands and he sees all the possibilities of all the things he could have done to, you know, take out Hitler, to save Bucky, to right all the wrongs he's ever made. And instead, he decides to crush the crystal and take that power away so that people have free will. Because if he were to do that, then he would just be the same as the timekeepers. I thought that was quite, it was a good moment.
It was a good scene. Yeah.
Good moment.
And very, very, very much in character.
And then it wraps up. Cap gives his inspirational speech about free will, which is immediately undone by saying, well, the crystal still exists. We'll come up with it sometime in the future.
We'll figure something else down the line when it reappears.
Yeah. Nothing ever really goes away. This is comics after all.
And everybody's real mad. Not everybody, but Kang and...
Well, Kang is, of course.
Kang's real mad. Immortus is kind of like, well, whatever. Supreme Intelligence seems to know something nobody else knows, which we find out at the end. But so everything is restored.
Everything is restored. Free will is guaranteed. And everyone is sent back to their respective timelines with only vague memories of what happened. I do like the fact that they say, you won't remember any of this until you need to. Which means we got a story down the road and we're just keeping the door open. So, and then that's it. Life goes on in the Marvel Universe as it was before. Except Kang did everything.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's Kang, Kang, Kang.
So anytime you have anytime there's a, you see something as a plot hole, Kang did it.
I mean, we're kind of given the last couple issues are pretty nutty, and it's they're probably the most entertaining just from a straight up, if one wants just sheer unadulterated comic book action, I mean, it's pretty great.
Yeah, it wraps up everything quite nicely, I think. All this confusion and weirdness that's been happening for the previous, 10 issues. It does kind of tie it all together in a neat little bow, but still leaves everything open-ended for the future.
Because in the final scene, we see the Supreme Intelligence has the Forever Crystal.
Yes, it just sort of manifests in front of him.
To be continued.
Yes, it's the final words are the end for now.
For now, which is always a great way to end it. So.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, this is a really... there's so much more that happens that we haven't even touched on, but this is a really entertaining comic. I can't even pretend I understand half of some of the Marvel lore that's going on in it, but just from a sheer entertainment aspect, this was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I do too. And like I said in the intro, you don't have to know all this Marvel lore because they do a good job of at least giving you a general overview of it.
Right.
But, if you do know some of the Marvel history, it adds some weight to the story. I do know a lot of this Marvel history, as I said, but I don't know near everything that was going on. There's still some stuff in here I was like, I don't know. I don't know what this is. I enjoyed this. I have been recommending some really complicated comic books recently. I need to settle down a little bit for my next recommendation.
It sounds just as a sneak preview that you might possibly be doing such.
I will, but that is for a future episode.
Hey-o!
Avengers Forever, recommend it. Go out and read it. It's a lot of fun. But anyway, next time on an all-new edition of the Collected Edition, Brian, it's your choice. What are we reading?
It is. So, stunningly, I realized that we've never recommended Hellblazer.
No, we have not.
So, for our next podcast, we are going to be doing... Original Sins, the first Hellblazer trade, which collects Jamie Delano's first 9 issues of Hellblazer. It's the first 9 issues of the series, which I think will be very interesting.
It will be interesting, and lots of bugs and goo.
Lots of bugs and goo.
Yes.
Hellblazer, Original Sins, issues 1-9.
It's going to be absolutely fantastic. Love Hellblazer, love Kong. We have to figure out, is it Constantine or Constantine?
You say potato, I say potato.
Who says potato? Seriously?
Somebody does.
All right. So that's it. I hope you all.
All right.
Yeah. Look forward to that. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I hope you all enjoyed this. Go out and read yourself some Avengers Forever. If nothing else, you'll learn a lot about what's going to be coming up in the Marvel MCU. The movies are heavily influenced by this comic and comics similar to it. That's it. God, endings suck. Just leave us a comment on our website, collectediditionpodcast.com. Listen to the outro, which will give you all the information on how to contact us. And until next time, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter @collectededpod. That's collected, EDPOD. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained?